Hey you guys, welcome back again to my Tomes of Terror. This is my little book review show. Now, the book that I'm going to be talking about today was one that I actually read probably back in the early 2000s, and I really loved it. And when I was initially thinking about doing this series, this was definitely one that I wanted to do a reread on to see if I liked it as much the second time. And I absolutely did. And to be honest with you, reading all the reviews of this on Goodreads, this seems to be in a lot of people's favorite books of all time lists, and I can totally see why. This is Boy's Life by Robert R. McCammon. Now, I don't think that this was actually the first McCammon that I read, because he was generally known as a horror writer. And this isn't exactly a horror novel, but I had read a few of his other stuff before I got to this one, because I saw this one was recommended a lot. Now, this book first came out in 1991, and I believe that it won the World Fantasy Award in 1992, and is pretty much almost universally considered among his fans and among critics and stuff like that as his best work. Now, as I mentioned, it's not really a horror novel per se. It does have horror elements in it. It does have kind of scary elements in it. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure what genre you would call this. It's kind of a patchwork of a lot of different things. I think first and foremost, primarily, it's a coming of age type of story. It's also got a murder mystery kind of like woven in there. It has some like Southern Gothic elements, and it also has a lot of magical realism type elements. So I think when I looked on the Wikipedia page, it may be called, I think it called the genre like mystery dark fantasy. I don't know if I'd go as far as dark fantasy, because dark fantasy kind of more conjures up, at least in my mind, I don't know, just like more supernatural elements. This is kind of more akin to, I see this compared to Ray Bradbury's stuff a lot, which is totally, that's a totally legitimate comparison, particularly as Something Wicked This Way Comes or Dandelion Wine or something like that. I've seen it compared a lot to Stephen King's The Body, which Stand By Me was based on, also a completely legitimate comparison, where it's just kind of like, a coming of age story and kind of like a quilt of life occurrences with this one thread kind of going through the middle of it. And it's sort of like kind of a nostalgic magic of childhood type stuff too. But it's also got like some scary elements and a little bit of supernatural stuff going on. So this book is, I'm not sure if it, I'm sure this has a lot of aspects of McCammon's own upbringing, because this is actually about a 12-year-old boy named Corey Mackinson, and he's growing up in a small town in Alabama. Now, Robert McCammon also grew up in a small town in Alabama, so I imagine that a lot of his own childhood experiences, informed his writing of this novel. So one of the themes of the novel is kind of like the magic of childhood and how, certain things when you're a kid seem so much more magical, whimsical, and also horrible and monstrous. And I think the kind of the theme of the book is to not let go of that as you become an adult, because that's something that comes up a lot and comes up in a lot of characters in the book, how, people, when they grow up, they have to let go of all this magic that they had when they were children, and how you should really try to retain that into adulthood. And much like I said, like Ray Bradbury's work or some of Stephen King's stuff, it was particularly stuff that was set in the 60s, maybe even like the first part of It, stuff like that. But really, it gives me the strong The Body vibes, really, because it's just kind of like, a group of young boys, doing young boy things and like kind of talking about life and what it was like to be a kid growing up in that era, like in that location. So the plot of the novel, it's kind of hard to pin down, because it has a plot, it has a through line, there is like a murder mystery that's sort of wending its way through the book. But this story, it's almost reads like, so don't go into this expecting this to be like a traditional narrative, I guess. What it is it's set Over about the course of a year, and it's set in four sections, which each represent a season. And you're essentially following, it's in the first person, and it's from the point of view of this 12-year-old boy, Corey. And he's just kind of going through his life, and he goes on all of these sort of tangents or like kind of adventures, I guess. Some of which are kind of cool, some of which are scary and life-threatening, some of which are very sad and tragic, but all coming back toward like this central murder mystery. So it's almost kind of like the murder mystery part is like a river, and then like all this other stuff is like tributaries that kind of like go off. And some of them just kind of go off, but a lot of them just kind of come back and feed into the river, I guess, if you want to put it like that. As I said, I read some other reviews of this. Most people are just effusive in their praise, 4 and 5 stars all over the place. Every now and then, you did get one that was just 1 or 2 stars that say, "Hey, I was interested in the murder mystery. Why does it go off on all these seemingly unrelated tangents?" But I think, as I said, the whole point of the book is just trying to give you this patchwork of childhood at this time period, this patchwork of this small town at this time, and you know, the murder mystery being sort of just like the largest or emblematic of sort of the dark side of small town life in the 1960s, I guess, if you want to put it like that. So it almost reads, I don't want to say, it's not exactly like a series of short stories because it is, you know, following a timeline and it is referring back to other things, but it is very episodic in the sense that some things, you know, each chapter is kind of, I don't want to say it's completely self-contained because, as I said, it does refer back to other things, but it's almost like a series of interconnected short stories or interconnected vignettes, some of which do come back around and feed into the central narrative. You know, so if you go into it knowing that and not expecting it to be, you know, focused on this murder mystery the whole time, then I think you'll find it a really, really enriching, like a really rewarding experience. A lot of people, and this is actually one of the few books that I've read that really does give you a sense, and even though you know, this the kid is growing up like before I was born, it really does give you a sense of what it would have been like day to day to be a child in that era, you know what I mean? And in that particular location, a very small town in the South. And it really captures that that kind of thing of being a kid where everything is just so, like the world is just so magical and like your imagination and reality kind of like meld together in a way that's, you know, that you can't really tease apart. And I really think that it's really, really good at capturing that. I mean, McCammon is a great writer. As I said, I've read some of his other stuff as well. I mean, anything, if you like Stephen King stuff, like The Body, or you know, or It, you know, particularly the first part of It with about the kids. If you like Ray Bradbury's stuff, then you'd probably be really into this too. I've also seen this compared to Kill a Mockingbird, which, you know, it kind of has that sort of vibe about it as well, because it does have a lot of stuff about, you know, it's Alabama, 1964. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, the burgeoning civil rights movement. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, people in the town being in the Klan and stuff like that. So it goes into, as I said, it goes into like awesome stuff about being a kid, you know, riding your bike through the fields and going to the monster movies and all that kind of stuff. And it really captures that really well. But it captures like kind of the dark underbelly as well. And also kind of captures these sort of crazy, like eccentric sort of characters. So in that way, it's kind of like a Southern Gothic, a lot, you know, the way that a lot of the characters are described. So kind of like, if you like the way Michael McDowell like has these kind of real eccentric Southern characters, that's kind of turns up in here too. So in other ways, it's not really like a Michael McDowell, but it does have that kind of Southern, like Alabama type of flavor to it. So if you're into that, then you might like this one as well. As I said, it's long. It's probably like 600, 700 pages, something like that. The first time I read it, as I said, I think I read it back in 2001, 2002, something like that, and maybe a little bit later. And I think I checked it out of the library, like the print version, but I was very, very happy to see when I was looking through my Kindle Unlimited. If you have Kindle Unlimited, you can actually read it online for free, which I did. So I was really, really happy to see that that was on there because I really particularly wanted to reread this. So as I said, we're following a 12-year-old boy named Corey. Now, at the very, very beginning of the story, his dad is a milkman. And Corey always gets up early, like before he goes to school, and he helps his dad out on his milk route in this small town called Zephyr in Alabama, which I don't think is a real town. So on this particular morning, it's very cold. I believe it's in March. So they're out before the dawn and they're delivering the milk to everybody in the town that ordered some. And while they're on this sort of county road, I think it's Route 10 or whatever, they are very startled as they're driving down the road in the milk truck. This car comes barreling out of the woods and goes into a lake and starts to sink. So Corey's dad, whose name is Tom, obviously jumps out of the truck and jumps in there to help the person, like trying to get, because they can see that there's a driver in the car, so he jumps in there and tries to help them out. However, when he gets in there and attempts to get this person out of the car, he notices a few very alarming things. One, this man is completely naked. Two, this man is handcuffed to the steering wheel. Three, this man looks as if he has been beaten the shit out of. Four, he has a piece of wire around his throat and is clearly already dead. So obviously, this is a murder. Now, while Tom, the dad, is trying to like process this and trying to, you know, get out of the water before the car like sucks him under the bottom of the lake as well, his son, Corey, who is still in the truck or near the truck, thinks he sees a dark figure, like kind of a shadowed figure over in the woods, like watching. So you're led to assume maybe this is somebody that had something to do with murdering whoever the hell this was. Now, later on, you know, as Tom gets out and he's drying off and everything, and he's very, very traumatized by this because, you know, he grew up in a really small town. This is a very safe place. And, you know, even though he said he'd seen dead people before, he'd seen terrible things before, but for some reason, he said this really affected him more than anything else because it was just the cold-bloodedness of it was what really got to him. Somebody obviously tortured this man, and just the meticulousness of him being tortured in that particular way, and then the fact that somebody would like take all the time to put him in the car so he couldn't get out, like when he was already dead, like put his body at the bottom of the lake. And it also disturbs him because he's like, well, whoever did this has to be from around here because otherwise, how would they know that this lake was deep enough to hide the entire car and that, you know, and that it's so deep that it would never be dredged and that the body would never be found? I believe they mentioned at some point that the lake might be like 300 feet deep or more. So he's like, so it has to be somebody around here. So this like really traumatizes him. Not only that the murder was so calculated, but also that whoever did it must live in their town, and so it's probably somebody that they know, and that really, really bothers him. And over the course of the book, he gets more and more traumatized by it and kind of starts, you know, he starts losing weight, he starts losing sleep, he starts having nightmares that he thinks the guy is like calling to him, and all this other kind of stuff. So that's like another thing that runs through. Now, Corey, he actually goes over to where he thought he saw the shadow. He's not entirely sure that he saw somebody standing over there, he's pretty sure, but he's willing to admit, well, maybe it was just my imagination. But then he goes over there to where he thought he saw the shadow standing, and he finds a very, very small emerald green feather. Now, he doesn't know if this has anything to do with the person that murdered whoever this was in the car, but he takes it home with him. Although he doesn't tell anybody about it, he has his own reasons why he doesn't tell anybody about it. He doesn't really think anyone will believe him, or he's not entirely sure that he saw anybody, and he doesn't want to put people on the wrong track. So obviously they report this to the police, and the police investigate. And interestingly, the guy who was in the car, like the dead man that was in the car, nobody knew who he was. Now the only distinguishing mark that they had was he had this tattoo like on the back of his shoulder that was like a skull with wings coming out of it. And so the dad describes it, and they pretty much question everybody in town, and like nobody knows the dude. And they're like, well, obviously the lake is way too deep. We can't, and you said he was already dead. You know, we can't dredge him. We can't get him out of there. So if we don't know who he is, we don't really know, you know, he's not from around here. And we don't really know, you know, nobody saw him come in on a bus. Nobody saw who he was. So it's like, so there's not really a lot we can do. So, like, the sheriff is still kind of trying to work on it, but he's like, look, this is probably not going to go anywhere because we have no idea who this dude is. So we don't know where to start. Like, we don't know who it was that would have killed him. So that's kind of like the opening, you know, salvo, I guess. And this is the murder mystery that, as I said, is sort of like ties all the way through. Like, who is this man at the bottom of the lake? Who killed him? Why did they kill him? Why was he tortured? You know, did he have some kind of information or something like that? So from that opening, you know, the murder mystery aspect does keep coming up, and a lot of things that happen over the course of the book like tie into it later on. But from that point, it sort of goes more into Corey just kind of like living his life. Like, the murder mystery is always, like, he's always kind of thinking about it. Like, it's always, like, in the back of his mind. And every now and then he'll, you know, go investigate, like, a, you know, an aspect of it, like, to see if his hunches are correct or whatever. But mostly from this point on, as I said, it goes into a series of sort of interconnected vignettes about, you know, him and his friends doing various things around the town. So, you know, it goes on through their summer, like what they do during the summer and things like that. Now, some of the interconnected stories, like I said, are happy, like, you know, when they all get out for summer and they're all having a thing where they're running around in the woods and suddenly they all sprout wings. So, like I said, it's like magical realism. And the trope of it, the reason why it works, I think, is because, one, the story is very, very grounded in reality. You have these magical things that turn up every now and then. You know, for example, one time Corey is in the car with his dad and looks behind them and he sees this black car with flames on it. And he knows that that car is not really there because that car was a very famous car around the town that crashed and burned like a year prior. And the, you know, the guy that was driving it was killed. So he knew it was like a ghost car. So it's like that kind of stuff. But it works because I guess the conceit of the book is that Corey is now a grown man and is writing down his recollections of his of this particular year of his childhood when he was 12 years old. And because his whole thesis is, you know, as an adult, you have to hold on to the magic that you had when you were a kid, like your imagination, because he ended up becoming a writer, which is... And when he was 12, that was like the year that he discovered that that's what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a storyteller. Then he's essentially telling his memories the way they felt to him rather than maybe the way that they really happened. So as I said, it's kind of like it's very realistic. It's very realistic. And then once it gets into a thing where, you know, all him and his friends all get out for summer and they're all running around with their dogs in the woods and they all sprout wings and start flying around. I mean, obviously that's metaphorical. It didn't really happen, but that's he's just writing it the way that he wanted it to be or the way it felt to him rather than the way it really was. So that's kind of how, because I did see one review where she's just like, yeah, as soon as like they spread wings and started flying, I was just like, yeah, no thanks. But as I said, it didn't really happen that way, if you want to say it like that. It was just he's writing about how he felt at the time. So as it goes on, you have this whole town and all of these sprawling characters. You have vignettes about, as I said, summer. You have one about like the carnival coming to town and there being this mysterious trailer that has this monster in it, and it's like they, you know, nobody wants to go in, but then they all have to go in because they think it's going to be this thing, and it ends up being like essentially a dinosaur maybe that gets out. So there's that. There's kind of this whole through line, because, you know, this is Alabama in the South, so you have like the main town of Zephyr, which is kind of like you have your middle class people, and then you have like the upper class, you know, the people that own the whole town, and they have a big mansion, and then you have, you know, the black area of town, which is called Bruton, and over there they have this woman, she's like the matriarch, or like kind of sort of the boss of Bruton, I guess, just, and she's just called the Lady, and she's like 106 or something. And every year they all they come out to the lake, the Tecumseh River, and put all this meat in there, and it's for Old Moses, which is essentially a sea monster. I mean, I'm guessing the way it's described, because Corey does actually see it later on when there's a flood in the town, I'm assuming that it's just like a monster alligator, but the way they describe it, it's almost like a mythical sea monster type of thing. And as I said, there's also a kind of a thing where the town, there's like a really bad storm and like the town starts to flood, and Corey and his parents, they go down to Bruton to help, you know, stave off the floodwaters, you know, putting up sandbags. And a lot of the houses get inundated with water, and he and Corey ends up having a confrontation with Old Moses, this big like sea monster alligator, whatever, and saving another little black boy from it. And from that, like, he kind of becomes, you know, the Lady summons him and, you know, asks him, you know, thank you for saving him and thank you for helping us with the flood and everything. And it's like, what would you like more than anything in the world? And he tells her that he wants a new bike because his bike just broke. And, you know, and his parents can't afford to buy him a new one. So he ends up getting this bike, which he calls Rocket, which you're kind of led to believe sort of maybe has magical powers, because like I said, the lady also kind of has magical powers, because some stuff that happens later on, like during, for example, like there's a shootout later on, and some stuff that happens in there like leads you to believe that she can actually do magic shit. So like I said, so it's kind of that kind of thing. But if it makes any sense, it's more like a mostly grounded in reality story with just like touches of magical realism in it. It's not like full bore, you know, it's mostly realistic, but then it's just kind of like these little things happen that, you know, that are maybe like magical, you know what I'm saying? So I really liked that tone of it. And as I said, it just gave me like a real Bradbury type of vibe. So if you like that kind of stuff, then you'll probably really be into this if you haven't read it. As I said, it's not really, you know, obviously I don't want to spoil the murder mystery, because that actually does end up getting solved at the end. But along the way, you know, there's all kind of troubles with, there's like a gang of moonshiners, bootleggers that sort of live out in the woods, and you know, they, you know, Corey comes across them, like him and his little friends are out camping, and they accidentally sort of like stumble into some bad shit they're gonna do, and they have to like try and thwart that or try to get away from that, like without getting shot or whatever. They have to elude these two bullies that are in the town that are always like kicking the shit out of them. Corey has to go through some like really sad things, like if you're real sensitive about like animal stuff, there's a really, really sad chapter in this about Corey's dog. It's pretty upsetting, so yeah, I'm just warning you like right away. It's like, you know what I mean? So you know, but the point of it is that he learned how to let go, I guess, of something that he loved, because, you know, the dog was suffering, and he was selfish, and he wanted the dog to stay with him, and it ended up like working out really badly, and he felt really bad. So it was that kind of thing. So he has to deal with like loss and things like that, and finding out how, as magical and beautiful as his childhood is, and how it's kind of like about a loss of innocence too, because like some of the stuff that happens in the town, some of the stuff he finds out about the people in the town that he thought were good people, but were absolutely not good people, it really like caused him to grow up. So it's really like kind of instructive, I guess, that it's set when he's 12 years old. So it's almost kind of like he's on the cusp of being a teenager and growing up and losing that childhood innocence. So it's all kind of tied in with that sort of theme. But yeah, I mean, if you haven't read this, or if you've read some other McCammon and haven't got around to this one because it's not a horror novel, I would definitely recommend it. And honestly, I would really recommend this to anybody, like whatever genre you like, because it's beautifully written, and it's really, I mean, just the themes of it, even if you didn't grow up as a kid in the 60s, I think the themes of it will resonate with everybody, because there's something in there that everybody can relate to, like from their own childhood. And obviously, you know, if you grew up like in the American South in the 1960s, then it will resonate all the harder because of, you know, the larger cultural forces at play. But you don't have to have, like I said, I didn't grow up in the 60s. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. But I could totally, you know, relate to a lot of the stuff in here of feeling the way that the kids in this felt, you know, of having to learn to deal with like really shitty stuff, finding out, you know, that people in the town that you thought you liked or thought were your friends were terrible people, or, you know, conversely, finding out that somebody that you didn't really think that much of actually did turn out being like heroic, or everybody had something to offer or something like that. So it's just like a real, it's just this really nice tapestry, I guess, like of a year in the life of a boy, but it's also like a universal type of story. As I said, it's got scary stuff in it. Honestly, it's, I think a kid that was maybe 12 years old, around the same age as the protagonist in this, they might get a lot of out of this as well. It does have some scary stuff in it, but, you know, and obviously since it's set in the 60s, there's a lot of, you know, slurs that we wouldn't use today. But you know what I'm saying? But that was of the time. So that's why it's in there. And so I think it's kind of important to leave it in there, so, you know, to get like a realistic view of the time that this took place in. So I don't really think that I would have any reservations about letting a kid this, you know, 12 or 13 years old read this and maybe, you know, I think they would probably dig it. So like I said, it's not a children's book. It's not a YA novel. It's for adults. But I think that, you know, tweens could probably get a lot out of it too, and maybe could relate to it much harder than an adult could. I don't know. It does have kind of like a flavor of nostalgia to it too. So maybe that would resonate more with an older person. But yeah, if you haven't read it, and you've just read, or you've just read some of his horror stuff, definitely read it. It's a great, great novel. And it's just, I was really, really happy to get to read it again, because I think I liked it even better the second time. I didn't remember a lot about it, like, from the first time I read it. I just remember, like, the feeling it gave me. Like, I really, really dug it, like, a lot. I was like, oh, man, I really need to, you know, I just remember closing it and being like, oh, that was, it's like, almost like you didn't want it to end, even though, you know, like I said, it goes off on all these kind of, like, tangents and all these kind of, like, interconnected stories, but it was still, you got so into Corey's mindset, and you got so into like all the eccentricities of all these people in the town and all this stuff that was going on, that you almost didn't want it to end. Like, you kind of, and I mean, the way that McCammon writes is just so descriptive, and his characterizations are so sharp that these all seemed like real people. I mean, this seemed like a living, breathing town with all of these people in it. And so, you know, so it's a really like immersive experience. So if any of you guys have read it, let me know what you think about it. If you haven't read it, I would definitely recommend it. As I said, you don't need to be into horror. It's not even really that much of a horror novel. It's just kind of a literary fiction murder mystery type thing, Southern Gothic, as I said, with some magical realism in it. So if that sounds like something you'd like, if you know, if you like Bradbury, if you like some of Stephen King stuff, you'd probably really like this as well. So give it a read and tell me what you think about it in the comments, and I will see you guys on the next Tomes of Terror. Bye.